Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Richard Osborne and the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Expert Language Trainer Podcast, Episode 9. In this podcast, I'd like to talk about the process of becoming a language trainer and becoming a good language trainer, an expert language trainer, through self-development. And I'm not talking this time about how much time you put into professional training, for example, or reading books, or you know, taking courses or whatever. I'm talking about actually thinking about how you are as a person when you're in a class with an individual, with a group. You know, how much have you actually thought about your own personal way of being with the students, how that affects their learning, how much you're actually motivating them to take this journey with you or not, how much you're bringing the fire to the training that's missing from if they were just to go and buy a book and just train themselves by, you know, reading some grammar exercises and completing some gap fills and, you know, doing some sort of speaking activity into a mirror. You know, what is that, what that fire, that passion that you bring to language training? So I personally think that I used to have a lot of colleagues when I worked in Paris who, you know, this would be the big debate, because you would have a lot of people who would be convinced that your personality is not something that you can really change or adapt to fit to the language training scenario. So you would, you know, I remember there was one colleague I worked with, somebody who was dear to me and a mentor to me, who would always argue, you know, that he wasn't very extrovert. And so when he would go into a classroom, he would be, he wouldn't put on a show, he wouldn't put on an act. He wouldn't try to be more fun than he actually is. You know, he knew that he wasn't really a kind of, he wasn't a person who enjoyed just randomly having fun and, you know, being bubbly and funny or whatever. He was somebody who was quite reasonably serious, and he was very structured, and he had a very structured approach to teaching. You know, he would very rarely deviate from the program. So, you know, if the plan of the day with that group was to go through CVs, you know, how to write a CV, and some other stuff came up during the class, he would, you know, chat about it with them, but he would make sure that at the end of it, he got out of that with everybody being able to go away and make a CV, which for me was really inspiring. It inspired me to do the Delta qualification, because that's where he got that initiative from, that idea from. You always have to go away from a language lesson with some kind of objective achieved. I think personally that's really important. I think with no matter what you do, you know, even with these podcasts, I don't just, you know, I have a tendency just to ramble, but at some point in there, I'm always telling myself, okay, there has to be something in here of practical value that the person listening to this can go away with and actually try. You know, I try to never just ramble for the sake of rambling. I try to put in the names of tools or the names of books that you can read or courses you can take or whatever. And so this, you know, this guy was the inspiration to me. And so I felt that was a great way of teaching. However, I questioned how much when he went into the classes, he was actually being his true self. And I know from observing his classes that they were really nice and structured and very, you know, very professional. But knowing him as I knew him, it, you know, I was wondering, is that actually his true self that he's showing these learners? Is he bringing his true self to this class? And I think it was reflected in the way he acted outside the classroom too, that on a social level, there was a lot of distance there. I don't know if it was a cultural thing or if it was just an upbringing or whatever personality thing, but there was a lot of distance between him and colleagues in terms of getting really personal, like not sharing really deep personal things, but trying to keep it very, you know, at a certain level of knowledge that you're not going to get in deep and know him very deeply just by knowing him for a couple of years, for example. And I think that's, you know, I've known people like that in the past who they, you know, it takes years and years and years to really get them to one day open up suddenly and tell you things that are going on in their lives and to be real with you. Now, I think that when I started going into classes in the beginning with that Celta style of trying to remain really like focused on what the objective is and trying to play the role of the, you know, I remember I used to do this thing when I did the Celta. There was a lot of focus on making your own activities. So, for example, doing card activities and doing, and you know, one of the focuses of my particular Celta was get the learners moving. That was one of our lessons was, if you can get your learners moving, get them to stand up, even if it's a group of professional stuffy old managers, get them to stand up and move around and do something. So do a card game where they have to stand up and like swap cards with each other. It's just the fact of getting their blood flowing by making them stand up is a good idea to, you know, to keep their attention, I suppose, to not let them fall asleep, I guess, in the class. And so that was one thing that I remember bringing to my first job in Paris. And I remember it's not something that I enjoyed personally. So I would do it, but I would feel weird. It's hard to describe. It's not like feeling dirty. I don't want to say that, but it's kind of like what it was. It's feeling a bit dirty, a bit weird about making people do something that I personally, if someone tried to make, I think this was where the epiphany happened. It was one day when you realize if I had a teacher and they tried to make me do that, I would actually probably rebel. I would start a mutiny, because I just, you know, I don't like the idea of getting up and walking around and doing sort of artificial activities like that. I think artificial is the word, because you're trying to make the classroom into a fun place, much like an e-learning system is trying to make doing endless gap fills fun by giving you points and badges and stuff like that. You're trying to turn the classroom into a fun place. One of the bare naked truths that I revealed, I wrote an article in the IATFL Voices magazine a few years ago, where I talked about how the bare naked truth is that the classroom is actually a fundamentally unnatural place to practice language, because when you're practicing language, you're not practicing in simulation to one day be able to speak in a classroom. That's not your objective. You're practicing language because you want to speak with somebody in your office, or you want to speak with a relative of yours who's English speaking, or you want to go on a holiday somewhere and speak English with them. So, you know, okay, fair enough, you can't really simulate and take the learner on a holiday to do, you know, you can't take them to, well, you can't not take them, okay. It's difficult to take somebody to London to go and do English practice just for a class. You know, you would do it for an intensive week and it would be with a whole group. It's a whole thing. But my argument was that's not a reason to say, well, we should just do it in the classroom then. The classroom is for sure an unnatural place to practice. It can be boring. You have to make it lively. You want to put pictures on the walls. You want to do board work. You want to get people moving around, you want to do card games and try to make that classroom a fun place to simulate language. But it is a kind of like holodeck on Star Trek, you know, it's still projecting something that's not really there. So my argument was we should actually get out of the classroom and go, you know, if I want to teach my learners about how to make a presentation, why don't I take them, you know, one time I got them to prepare a presentation about the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, and then we actually went there. And the lesson was, the face-to-face part was to go there and to sit inside Notre Dame and to be just immersed in that amazing environment, and give their presentations in front of me with all the tourists walking around them, people listening to them. You know, it was an amazing experience for me and for them. And it took me out of that context of the classroom and trying to animate it and making it into something it's not. So just coming back to what I was saying, when I'm making them walk around the classroom and I'm making them move and whatever, it just felt so fundamentally wrong. That's what led me to do this whole excursion-based learning, this, you know, going outside and doing proper simulations outside in the real world, was I didn't like that feeling of that I was doing something unnatural. For me, that was not a way to learn. For me, that's not a way I would like to learn. So I was feeling like I wasn't being true to myself, because I was putting a smile on and doing these activities, making people move around the classroom, putting a smile on and pretending that I was driving it, you know, pretending like, yeah, this is going to be fun, guys, come on, let's get up. Because very often you say that and people don't do it. You know, you say, oh, get up and let's swap the cards, and people just look at you like, huh, are you serious? You're like, yes, I am. You know, so you have to try to put on an act to get them to actually do that. So, oh, come on, it'll be fun. Let's go. And you're just lying. Yeah, I'm not. I was lying. I didn't think it was going to be fun. I thought it was just going to be a kind of artificial activity to get them to get their brains reactivated. So there came a point where there was that epiphany where I was like, okay, from now on, I'm only going to do things in the class that I believe in. And I think there was a point, especially this whole expert language trainer thing, there was this point where I'd read so many books and I was so deep into what language was and like how the words work together and how sentences were built and, you know, all sorts of different things that you get from reading amazing books by people like Thornberry or Michael Lewis or whatever, that I was really confident in what I was doing in the classroom. So if I was telling people something about language, I was feeling really confident about what I was telling them. The information I was giving them was really good. So I stopped doing activities that I didn't enjoy. And if somebody would question the way I was doing things, then I knew that I could pull out evidence from, you know, existing studies and methods and approaches from language training, could say, yeah, but, you know, you say that, but I actually know that that's not the case. I know that what I'm doing is actually okay, theoretically. If you're not motivated, that's my fault. You know, I'm the trainer. You know, for me, in my opinion, if your learner is not motivated, you're the one who has to take the blame for that. You're the one who has to take the responsibility, no matter what. You know, you're being paid, and I've said this before, you're being paid to do a job. Your job is to get that person through the grueling, rather boring process of language learning using, you know, conversation, social conversation, being interested in their lives, being interested in their interests, you know, taking an interest in them, following up on stuff, learning about them, you know, being able to ask them, oh, so how's, you know, Nancy and how's your kid and whatever, did they get through their school exam, being able to like actually properly talk to them like a colleague or like a friend almost, is really important. You know, if your learner isn't motivated, it's because you haven't managed to make a connection with them. Now, I found that as soon as I started being true to myself, like I started going into a classroom and really just totally being myself, with that professional veneer, so I wouldn't make them do an activity that I personally wouldn't believe in. I wouldn't accept to let them, you know, dictate what kind of homework they wanted to do unless I personally believed that that would be a good thing for them to do. Or at least I would give them my opinion. I would say, okay, you know, you can do Duolingo or something, or, you know, some application like that, like memorize, but with the knowledge that it's not going to work because, and explain why. And if they want to go ahead and do it anyway, that's fine. But, you know, I would give them my straight, honest opinion. I would tell them the truth the way I saw it and based on the information I had and the knowledge I had. So there was a moment where I just started being really myself. And I think at that point, you're opening yourself up to one person or a group of people. And you have to kind of, you have to really look at how you are when you are yourself, you know. It's like what I said with this colleague of mine. Are you being your true self, or are you being the person who you are in front of your friends, which is a kind of, you know, wall, a barrier against them discovering who you really are? And this is something that is, you know, crossing a bit more into psychology, where, you know, people with social anxiety, which I know about because I had it before, when you have social anxiety, you tend to think that you're not projecting your true self to other people. You tend to think that you're putting on an act, and the person that you're showing other people is not real, or it's not really you, you know, with air quotes, it's not really you, and that the real you is something else, and it's not really something that's very socially, you know, acceptable. You're not going to be fitting into the crowd with the real you. And that's obviously, you know, a complete fabrication of your mind. So, you know, you are you, the person you project is you. It's, you know, if you're putting on an act, again with air quotes, it's because you're doing actions and saying things that you think are going to portray a certain personality. The problem is, a personality is so complex. This is the psychology of it. A personality is so complex that there's no way to define it just by simple actions and things that you say. So people will perceive in a much more complex way your personality than what you can actually, you know, show them in terms of your actions and your behaviors. So you actually genuinely have no control over what other people perceive you as. Now, if you say funny things all the time and you think that that's not you, that's just you trying to be funny to fit in, other people will still perceive you as you. So they'll still see your personality in this very subconscious, very complex way where they understand you in this, you know. It's like when you see someone's face, you know, how do you, you don't actually know what the features of someone's face are. You don't know how exactly how big their nose is or how high their cheekbones are, but your brain has that human thing of just being able to like recognize and remember an incredibly complex configuration of someone's face. And I think for me, personality, it's similar, that, you know, it's so complex, but the brain is programmed to just take into consideration loads of different factors. I'm sure, like, you know, I'm not going to try to guess at them because I don't know, I'm not a psychologist, but you know, that and that person will remember the way you are, and I don't think there's any way you can control that. Now, if they think you're funny because you say funny things, it means you have the capability to say funny things, and they perceive that you have the capability to say funny things. They're not going to say that's a funny person, and that's just the word that defines your personality. You know, they're gonna see you as, you know, Frank or Jane, and that's you, and you're unique to them. You know, everybody they know is unique. There's no two people alike, and that's because of this complexity. So Frank might be funny, but that's not funny Frank. That's not the, he's not defined by that. Or Jane might be shy, but that's not defining Jane as shy Jane. You know, that's, she's still Jane with her own unique, incredibly complex personality that she can't control the way people perceive it, and other people will perceive it in a myriad of different ways. So it's totally impractical to try to have any control over that. It's out of your control. So, you know, when you think, when this colleague is going into his classes and he thinks he's being a bit serious, he's trying to maintain that serious professional veneer, that just means that people will perceive him as somebody who tends to say serious things or tends to do serious things, but that's not, like, you know, serious Frank. That's, you know, just somebody who tends to do serious things, but he still has his own unique complex personality. So if you just think about that more than thinking about, well, I should be funny, or I should be cool, or I should be kind, or I should be, you know, listening to their problems and putting a hand on their shoulder or whatever. Whatever you think you should be to fit in, maybe just forget about that. Just concentrate on, I don't want to say concentrate on being yourself. I think that's a bit redundant to say concentrate on being yourself, because you are yourself. Whether you like it or not, there's nothing you can do, like I said. So maybe concentrate on accepting that you are yourself. That's a really, maybe that's the kind of aha moment. Concentrate on understanding that when you're in front of the learner, no matter how much you want to control it, you are yourself already. There's nothing you need to do. You actually don't need to do anything. You could completely sort of relax the personality engine, the social engine, and just say the stuff you want to say, do the stuff you want to do, and what comes out will just be you anyway. It's just a less suspicious version of you. People will just see, oh, well, it's not, you know, he's not being that serious. He's serious sometimes, and then sometimes he's not, and that's fine. That's just the way it is. That's normal. It's a normal way to act. You know, that's not going to compromise your personality. People are not going to think of you differently in terms of, you know, you have a different personality. Your personality will still be this complex, undefinable image. So, you know, once I started really just going in and just being myself, I think that's where a lot of things changed. You know, as feeling like I'm an expert language trainer, was, you know, now when people say to me, do you think, you know, somebody contacted me the other day who I used to teach, taught years ago, and said, you know, do you think you're ever going to do English lessons again? I'm like, yeah, I do some English lessons still. I'm thinking of getting back into it a bit more. I need to get my finger back on the pulse. Even though I was in it for 8 years full time, you know, I still need to stay fresh. So yeah, I would totally do that. And, you know, somebody said to me, yeah, but do you think you might not be a bit rusty? You know, it's been a couple of years since you've been really fully teaching a proper course. And I was like, nah, because, you know, I know that before I know that before, because I was being myself, no matter who came to me, I was able to find some way of connecting with them, as you do just in any social situation. If you're being yourself, you know, this immense complexity of personality permits you to find some sort of relationship with the person that you're the person that you're in front of. So, you know, you'll find a link somewhere. You'll find something where you have a shared connection, because there's so many variables. You know, you'll find something where you both like a certain TV show, or you both like certain kind of music, or you both have a certain feeling about politics or about, you know, whatever the issue of the day is. So, you know, and you get that by experience. You experience hundreds, maybe thousands of learners, you know, coming and going, and you realize, you know, I don't normally get it wrong. You know, 99 times out of 100, I'm actually connecting with somebody. And when I've connected with them, I'm not feeling like I'm doing something unnatural when I'm telling them what to do, when I'm showing them where to go with their language learning, when I'm bringing them through this process. It feels quite normal. It feels quite human, because you're not faking a connection with them. You're not using your, you know, so-called fake personality, or like, you know, barrier or whatever, shield or whatever it's called, and therefore you don't really have a connection with them. It's all a bit fake. You actually do have a connection with them, seriously. And you know, I guess I must have felt connected to 1,000 people over the 8 years that I was teaching. And that doesn't mean I have 8,000 friends. It doesn't mean I've come away from that with, you know, 8,000 new Facebook contacts who all have messaged me all the time. It just means that we had a connection. We did, you know, we did that fling. You can imagine it like that. We had a fling, you know, going through this process of language learning together. And in the end, we were able to part ways without, you know, me feeling like, oh, well, I got one over on that person. Haha, convinced them to like me. You know, they just did like me because they had no reason not to. We found a connection. We were two human beings. And so I think there's a lot to be said for thinking about how much you actually accept who you are. You know, I don't know about people who say you need to, you know, that, okay, there's a lot of business people would say, and I guess it's right, you need to love yourself if you're going to go into business. The first person you have to love is yourself, and then you'll love the product, and then you'll love the things you do with it, and then you'll love the customers and the service you provide. And it all makes sense that you know you have to believe in yourself before anything else can be successful. So I guess there's some truth in there, but I kind of see loving yourself as a bit more, maybe it's better the way I said it, in terms of, you know, not better, but like, I think if I was listening to this, I would be able to accept it better. I would be able to accept it more easily. It's what I said, you need to accept that you are you, and that the game you think you're playing, that the front you think you're putting up, that the mask you think you're wearing, that the shield you think you're using, whatever the term is, your coping mechanism, your, you know, your fun self, or your real self, or, you know, whatever the word is, that's an illusion. And it's an illusion you've made up by yourself. It's not real. It's not an actual thing. It doesn't exist in the real world. So in your head, it totally exists. And in your head, you're convinced that that's the case. That, yeah, but when I go out, you know, it's like somebody putting on loads of makeup or putting on really fancy clothes when they go out, thinking, you know, I don't want somebody to see me without my makeup on or without my cool shoes on or whatever, because then they're going to think I'm a loser. That's an entirely an illusion. It's not something you can really control. You are you. When people see you, you're you, and it doesn't matter if you have loads of makeup on or not. It doesn't matter if you're being really funny or not, or if you're being really friendly or really outgoing and fun or whatever or not. There's a great irony, actually. If you think you have your fun self and then your real self, those are just two different sides of the same coin. You know, if you are capable of being fun, it means that you are fun, if that makes sense. You can't pretend to be fun without actually being fun. it sounds so simple and so logical, but it is kind of, for me, it was an aha moment, and I think for a lot of people it could be an aha moment. So I want you to go away with that practical thing. You know, try to define and really come to terms with the different selves that you think you are. You're convinced that you are. So, you know, like I said, your fun self, your cool self, your sexy self, your whatever it is, because you, at the moment, you're convinced that those are things that you're really not, and you're really good at putting on an act, but you're really not. You know, look at the best actors in the world. The best actors in the world are people not who pretend. They don't pretend. Actors don't pretend. You know, I watched that Jim Carrey documentary about you know, Man on the Moon, when he was doing comedian, that American comedian, and how he actually genuinely inhabited the body of that comedian. Like, he felt like he wasn't himself for months or whatever, a year. It was Andy Kaufman. He was Andy Kaufman. He literally was him. Like, he became him for a year. You know, it's not pretending. You are that thing. And actors are really good at that, because they can actually become someone else, literally, like, change their personality and become someone else. And that's a skill. But most of us, I'm not an actor, and I know why, because I can't do that. I can't. So you think you can, and you're convinced that you're doing a good job, but you are actually not a professional actor. I'm sorry to burst your bubble. And so when you think you're putting on a cool self or a sexy self or a fun self, that's actually just you. You're not able to inhabit the body of someone else. That is actually just you. And it means that sometimes you're fun and sometimes you're boring. Sometimes you're sexy. Sometimes you've just woken up and your hair's all over the place and you're in your pajamas. You know, those are all you. And that's what I think. If you can go away with something from this, go away and try to define and write down all the different yous that you think exist. And then actually just look at that list and say, okay, well, that's actually all me. Just if you could look at that and try to imagine that that's all you. And it might actually make sense suddenly, just like it was in front of you all along. You might be like, actually, fair enough. I am pretty funny when I go to parties, and I'm not pretending. You know, I'm telling funny jokes. I can tell a funny joke. And sometimes I don't tell funny jokes. That doesn't mean I'm not funny. It just means sometimes I am really funny and sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I'm looking great and other days I'm not. Sometimes I'm, you know, you don't have to be one particular way all the time, because, like I said at the very beginning, that's not defining who you are at all. That's not, you know, when you're funny, it doesn't make you a funny, you know, a funny. I am just a funny, and that's it. That's your personality. Not at all. That's you have your personality. That's one thing. That's the core central sun of the universe, and then all the bodies that are rotating around that are the different things that you do. So sometimes the funny person comes around in orbit, sometimes the boring person comes around in orbit, sometimes the sexy person. And you know, you can pull them out when you need them, you can pull them out when you feel like they're appropriate, but it doesn't change the core thing. It doesn't change the core personality. That's always the same, no matter what, no matter what mood you're in, no matter what behavior you're doing. The core thing is always the same. And that's, you know, something that people won't be able to define. They won't be able to put a word to it. Your personality is just too complex. So think about that, because if you can go into a classroom and actually live that true self, sometimes be funny with certain learners who appreciate you being funny, sometimes be boring with certain learners who actually need a little bit of calm and a little bit of boring, sometimes be a bit flirtatious with some learners who like having a bit of a laugh or whatever, and you know, you think it's all above board, and that's fine. Whatever you feel like, just like if you are with friends, whatever you feel like is gonna make the atmosphere the nicest possible. It's not forcing people to be your friend or trying to trick them or something like that. It's just bringing out that part of yourself that's going to have the biggest impact and cause the most inspiration and passion with those people, and cause the best conversations, the most interesting conversations, and therefore the best kind of journey to go through the language learning process with them, the most efficient journey, because they feel so connected to you, because you've found that part of yourself that they really appreciate, or parts of yourself that they really appreciate, that they're really happy to go along that journey with you. And that's why they're not just buying a book and doing grammar exercises. That's why they're coming to you and paying you to do this job, because it's part of your job to find that thing that you can use to connect with them and to inspire them and to light the spark under their butts to get them through the language learning process. So that's all I've got to say about that. I know it's a really kind of head-melting subject, but it's honestly a subject that I feel like, from a lot of colleagues that I've had in the past, is a seriously important subject to take a look at in with yourself, and just to sit down and really think about, even if you might be uncomfortable with it. And I think a lot of people are. I know I was. Just do it, and just you won't discover something that you don't want to know. In fact, what you'll probably discover is the truth has been there in front of you all along, and actually you might come away from it feeling an incredible boost in confidence, if nothing else. So, you know, just really go and have a think about it. And if you want to tell me what you think, if you want to give me your opinion, I would love to hear it. So, you know, comment wherever you're listening to this, stick a comment in, tell me about your story, tell me about your journey. You know, tell me about what things you think you're about yourself, and let's start a conversation. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks for checking out this podcast. And if you want to know more, please follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. All the links are in the description. I really look forward to seeing you in the next episode.